Just in case you hadn't noticed, there's an election on in New South Wales. So I thought this would be a good opportunity to talk to some people who are directly involved. Now, I asked Matt Keane, the Coalition's Minister for Better Regulation, which takes in fair trading, which takes in strata, but he's a bit busy running an election, I guess, and being minister. However, I did get a chance to talk to Yasmin Catley, who is Labour's spokesperson for better regulation and innovation, and she'll be along later. And then after that, the second part of our chat with Phil Gall, who's the chair of the Owners Corporation Network. So, a lot to get through today. I'm Jimmy Thompson. This is the Flat Chat Wrap. A few days ago, I caught up with Yasmin Catley, who is the Labour Party's spokesperson for better regulation and innovation and fair trading. She's in the middle of an election campaign, so she was in Newcastle, I was in Sydney, I was using some fairly old technology to record the interview, so please forgive us if the sound quality isn't quite up to our usual standards. This is Yasmin.
Hello, how are you?
Hello! Technology got the better of you, eh?
Well, almost, but then I've decided to go old school, so I'm talking to you on a speakerphone with a little tape recorder running. At least I hope it's running.
All right. This is what happens when you're a regional MP.
Yeah, well, yeah, but you're a very prominent regional MP. You're opposition spokesperson for better regulation. Is that your official title?
Innovation and better regulation, but just the better regulation's fine, just for you, because it's too long, it's stupid.
Yeah, I noticed that innovation seems to have moved over to Victor Dominello's domain.
Well, it's been one of those things that Victor actually had has a deep interest and understanding of, but he didn't take the title. It did actually stay with Matt Keane.
All right.
But, yeah, so it was just sort of one of those things.
So he's a minister for longer titles.
Exactly. How about we have the Minister for Consumer Affairs?
Yeah, that would be quite...
How about we do that? Yeah. Go back to the future.
Minister for Fair Trading.
That's actually a policy of mine.
Right. Oh, good. Talking about policies, do you think these days politicians are more aware of strata?
I think that they absolutely are. I mean, obviously we know that more than 30% of people are living in apartment living and, are renting, and a large proportion of those, of course, are strata. And in addition to that, given our population growth, we've really had to look at how we accommodate people, and we're going up, not out, of course, because of the limitations on land that we have. So I think that they are. Are they necessarily regulating for that? Well, that's certainly not what's happening in New South Wales.
Right. And which areas do you feel that fair trading is falling down currently?
Oh, look, I've observed that from my breadth of discussions that I've had broadly with the sector that fair trading, unfortunately, just haven't got the capacity. They're stretched to the absolute limit when it comes to their capacity to be able to enforce and comply with the legislation that's before them. In many respects, I think that's possibly not their own fault, that they actually don't have the soldiers on the ground, if you like, which is obviously not good for consumers at the end of the day. If you're not doing something really well, then you're letting down consumers, and that's their role. Their role is to look after consumers. I think, though, that I've also observed that across the property regulatory portfolio, that there are failings in all of those areas dealing with property, and it would be my strong view that they should be taken out of fair trading and put into a standalone ministry.
Right, because I get the feeling, I think, I mean, obviously there are flaws in renting. You know, you want to have to get rid of the no-fault dismissal ending of leases, but I feel that there's less sympathy for strata owners because they're owners. Do you get that feeling?
Maybe there's less understanding. I don't know that I've observed that there's less sympathy, but I think maybe there's less understanding, and that view has to change. Like, the reality is that more than 2 million people live in strata. Like, that is a large cohort of the state's population, and it's going to grow. By all accounts, we're told that we're going to have more strata. So therefore, it's critically important that we look to the future and we regulate for the future. And unfortunately, that's not happening.
Right. And if Labor takes power at the upcoming election, what would your priorities be?
Well, the first thing that I've said that I will do in this role, if I were... Let's not get ahead of ourselves, it's hypothetically speaking, of course.
Yeah.
I never get ahead of myself, Jimmy.
No, that's a good plan in this world.
Yeah, that's right. The first thing I do is introduce a new... Well, obviously, I look at the structural framework of the portfolio. And I think that that is critically important to get the structure right, to make sure that the minister that is responsible for property regulation has all of those areas of responsibility under them. And that would include introducing a new building act, which is obviously also very important for strata owners. This is critically important, actually, because this is building quality buildings. And that is, I think, the most important plank of being a homeowner, whether you're in strata or whether you're in a freestanding house. Having confidence in the building that you're in is critically important. We would introduce a new building authority, and that authority would introduce the new act and it would fast-track the recommendations around safety, which were mentioned, of course, in the Lambert Review. It would establish best practice building regulation and certification process and look at that chain of responsibility. And also we would look at how efficient the building defects bond is. That would be one of the first priorities as well. So these things are critically important, in my view, that you have to get right. I've said this all along, if you get it right from the get-go, then consumers get a better deal at the end. So that's building in terms, strata would be in there as well. And obviously it would be that building authority that would look at those concerns that strata have around the building defects bonds, as I've just said, which I know is a critically important concern to people who live in strata. And we would introduce a strata commissioner as well, and that person would be in that portfolio as well.
Well, we've been talking about a strata commissioner this week, and what would a strata commissioner actually do? I mean, there's the question, what would they do? What would their job be?
Well, I think we'd model the strata commissioner on the Queensland Commissioner for Body Corporate model, which is working extremely well up there. I've had conversations with them up there, making sure that those lot... I think lot owners are necessarily unaware of their rights and obligations. I think it's one of those cases when people buy their property, it's the thing that they spend... or generally speaking, certainly for me, their most amount of money on that they have, their biggest expense in their life, but the thing that they actually know the least about.
Yeah.
And I see the role of a strata commissioner of being able to be that guiding light for people. And I think a big component of that should be education.
Right.
Letting people know what their rights are and what their obligations are. And in addition to that, of course, the most critical role would be dispute resolution, helping people resolve disputes.
Right. I'm talking about education, and I'm going slightly off script here. I'm not a member of OCN, but I'm helping them out with a seminar. And we've just been told that Fair Trading are refusing to pass the information on to the owners in the 400-plus buildings affected by cladding. It's a seminar about cladding. I mean, is that fair that they're saying, well, we didn't get their email addresses for this specific purpose, so we're not passing on the information about your seminar?
Well, sadly, the issue of cladding has been something that the government has not wanted to talk about at all. The Labor opposition have been prosecuting the government around the cladding issue since 2015. And we actually have Freedom of Information requests now that indicate to us that the government really would like to have, for the whole problem just to have gone away and not to talk about it, which obviously is irresponsible and it is not good governance to be taking that approach. One Freedom of Information request that I got back, in actual fact, was the the department recommending to the government that doing anything about cladding would stifle innovation. Well, innovation and increase red tape. Well, I'm sorry, but we have regulation for good reason, and that is to protect consumers.
Yeah.
And by, you know, covering your eyes and pretending it's not happening is not good enough when it comes to safety. In addition to that, we also asked about the buildings, which is obviously the issue you're just talking about, where they're located, and are people being known. I was particularly concerned about renters not being told, because they're the people in that strata environment that have the least amount of rights, and the government wouldn't divulge any of that information to us, and they hid behind a screen of terrorism. They said that it could be a terrorist risk by telling the opposition where these buildings were and having this information available. I think that the government, weren't quick enough to act on this. Yeah. They're still not quick enough to act. Most recently, they blamed local government for this. This is their responsibility, and they have been, I think, negligent in their approach to identifying these buildings, letting people know, and working with people, having the conversation with people about where to from here.
Right. Oh, fair enough. Now, on the vexed question of holiday letting, I know you've been very active in that. I mean, one of the suggestions that's come up has been that rather than apartment blocks, and this is our specific area, I know it affects houses as well, but apartment blocks being able to opt in rather than at the moment opt out. How do you feel about that?
Well, in my speech in Parliament, I actually agreed with that we should look at an opt-in system. But I think what is critically important here, and what the government has missed, is they've made this legislation which is not evidence-based. We have absolutely no data about where people are renting, how many hosts there are, how many nights there are on short-term holiday leave. We have nothing except what we're provided by the short-term letting companies.
Right.
And that's more just, in a conversation than it is in, hard evidence. Right. So it has been Labor's view from the get-go that we should have a registration scheme so that we actually can see what's going on, and we will then have evidence to tell us whether or not short-term holiday letting is having an effect on long-term rental market, whether or not short-term holiday letting is actually a quasi-hotel in apartment-style living, whether or not the burden on local councils is exaggerated because of the is heightened because of the number of holiday lettings, short-term holiday lettings that are going on in any one local government area. At the moment, we have absolutely no evidence. This is a policy that has been designed and delivered without any evidence whatsoever, and that is not good governance, and this is the point that I make. So the first thing that a Labor government will do is introduce a registration scheme so that we can collect the data and then be well informed on what is actually going on and not rely on anecdotal evidence.
Right. And would the government pay for that, or would the people, the hosts of these various lets?
I envisage it to be through essentially through the agency. Now, we already have a lot of people, for instance, through Service New South Wales. I'm using this just as an example. I would be guided, of course, by the department. They're the experts. They already have databases in place where they collect data from people for all sorts of reasons. So I would imagine that it would be an online registration scheme that would be centrally administered.
Right. Now, I've got a question, and I'm going to ask you to speculate here. Why does the current government seem to be so keen to use the word advisedly, so keen to let the holiday letting people do whatever they want? I mean, they got pulled up by a backbench revolt, but they seem to be ready to open up the whole state and every apartment block. Why are they so keen?
Well, I mean, these new shared platforms and the shared economy, we'll use that term because that is the term that it is now known as, is here to stay. And in fact, it has been around for a very long time. I mean, I live in a coastal town, so people have been short-term holiday letting not really that new. It's the online platform that's new and makes it much more easier for people to, you know, arrange, organise and access. I think that probably, it's my strong view that the government weren't wise in basing it on some evidence. If we look around globally at short-term holiday letting, and of course I have done that so that I could, you know, put forward a case to my caucus on where we should head in this. And it was most, or not most, but many countries' first instances to, or reactions to allow short-term holiday letting just to have a free ride, just to let it go and see how it went. And in a lot of instances, they've pulled back dramatically, reduced the cappings in some instances down to 30 nights, for instance. In New York, as you know, you can't short-term holiday let. Like in Spain, same. So it really is having significant impacts, and people have sat back and watched it. And we should have and should use that as part of our evidence base going forward to develop our legislation and our regulation around short-term holiday letting. Look, can I just be clear? The Labor Party is not opposed to short-term holiday letting. I'm the member for Swansea. And up here, like, well, it's a great example. This weekend, we've got the State Surf Life Saving Championships on. Right. So about 7,500 people come here to participate in that event. Now, we don't have the accommodation to support that number of people over, they're here for 2 weeks, over a 2 week period. So, short-term holiday letting's terrific here for that purpose. People can actually have somewhere to stay, and local people are able to, share their properties with them. But that's all well and good, but in areas that we know that it does have adverse effects, then we need to make sure that we've got a balance, that we've got the right regulation there, that, you know, people deserve the enjoyment and quietness of their own environment, and equally, if those who want to share their place also have a right to do that. But you've got to get the balance right, and you've got to have the evidence to be able to do that.
Right. Okay, well, look, I know you're really busy at the moment, and thank you so much for your time, and good luck with the election.
Oh, thank you very much, Jimmy. Well, 2 weeks to go, so you'll find me on a pre-poll booth for the next 2 weeks, swaying those undecided voters as they enter the polling booth.
Good for you, and I'm sure our paths will cross again, probably before the election. Okay. Thanks very much, Yasmin.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was Yasmin Catley, the Labour MP for Swansea, the area around Newcastle, and the Labour Party spokesperson for better regulation and innovation and fair trading somewhere in the middle of all that. Thank you very much to Yasmin for giving us her time. Now, last week we spoke to Phil Gall of the OCN, the Owners Corporation Network. It was a long interview. We had a lot to say. I didn't want to leave any out. So here is part two of my chat with Phil Gall. People don't think of themselves as apartment dwellers, but when people do start to think that that's an important part of their lives, then all these clusters that we're seeing of people living in apartments, they are voters. They're also voters.
Absolutely.
And the big difference here in Australia from most other parts of the world is you have to vote.
Indeed.
So if you've got that issue at the back of your mind, then, I mean, we're going to see this in Coogee. I seriously believe there's a chance that suddenly there's going to be an announcement that Coogee is going to get the Byron Bay bypass, that they will be allowed to restrict the number of nights for holiday letting there because it's such a concentrated issue. It's 50-50 there, I would say, because there's a lot of businesses there who go, well, we don't care where people
that'd
come
be a great,
from.
That'd be a great announcement, Jimmy, if they accompanied it with some way of enforcing it.
Yes, yes.
You know.
What, you mean like the Labour Party's register?
That would be an ideal start
Yeah.
You know, we you know,
we support the register here at the OCN. Well, I'm not in the OCN, but you are.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
And I support you.
Thank you. Yes, and it's vital. And our people can talk to you some more about that on another.
And here we are back on Airbnb again.
Yeah.
The great obsession.
Yeah.
I am with Phil Gall, chairman of the OCN, the Owners Corporation Network. We've been talking about cladding. We've been talking about Airbnb. Big success in the Airbnb front, I think. You've got better laws than anywhere else in Australia.
Which isn't saying all that much, by the
way. It's not saying that much, but at least
something. Yeah.
At least we're not in the same... I thought it was very ironic that Airbnb is saying that everybody should have the same laws as Tasmania. Tasmania is the model for the rest of Australia. Tasmania, where the government is having to pay landlords to bring their properties back into the residential.
Is that right?
Yeah. They're getting grants. They're saying, look, we'll give you a bonus if you bring it back into residential lets. Mm. Because, you know, Tasmania's tourism is a huge part of their economy there. Mm. So everybody's jumping on it. Anyway, so yeah, we have the least worst laws. Maybe that's the way.
When we get what you proposed the other day, a publicly funded advocate to look after the apartment owners who are being done by defective building owners and not have to go and engage their own lawyers and go through 6 years of hell trying to get what, if they were buying a motor car, they'd get straight away. Oh. Imagine if it was a motor car that had a cladding problem. There'd be a recall. It'd be fixed by the manufacturer. Problem over.
Yeah, just bring it in, sit there and have a cup of coffee.
We'll sort it. We'll fix it.
Or we'll lend you a car.
Isn't the airbags a similar thing?
Absolutely.
What happened there? They came back. Who carried that? Wasn't the consumer.
Certainly wasn't.
Who carries it? Who carries it in this case? The poor bloody apartment owners.
So to get to the, since you've raised the topic of the advocate. I mean, I suggested in a column recently that when there's a dispute over defects, when people move into a building and now it's a compulsory, a mandatory item on the agenda of the first AGM that you have to decide whether or not you're going to have someone check for defects, which obviously you're going to say yes. And then you look at your defects and you go back to the builder and you say, or the developer, and you say, here's our list of defects. Will you fix them? If the developer or builder says, no, we're not going to fix them, we don't agree with you. At the moment, what the owners have to do is say, right, we will hire lawyers to take you
and
engineers and all the other people to take you to court at our expense in the hope that your lawyers are not smarter than our lawyers and that we get some sort of satisfaction. And I've suggested that when that happens, that should be a neutral government-funded advocate who says, well, look,
arbiter.
Yeah, hey. And we've looked at this and we think this is a fair claim, or we think it's 85% of this is a fair claim. So we are going to say to the developer, you've got to pay this or fix it. And if you are not happy with that, take us to court.
Mm.
Take the government-funded advocate to court. And if we lose, the taxpayer pays, and taxpayers include people who live in apartments. Mm. Or if you lose, then you pay. Now, that seems to be... It's not a David and Goliath fight anymore. It's Goliath and Goliath.
That's right. And that assumes, by the way, that there's actually somebody there to go after.
Well, yeah. I mean, the whole phoenixing thing is another issue that has not been
resolved. We've talked about this a bit, and I can't understand why anybody who understood the current consumer protection of people buying apartments, new apartment buildings, would buy anything over three levels.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they would do it. I would recommend to folk, they let it go. Buy something that's 6 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Read the minutes of the meetings very carefully and look between the lines.
Yep.
And then decide whether you want to buy it. Because if the company that built your building goes belly up, your warranties are worth squat.
Yeah.
And in a building over three levels, there is no compulsory homeowner warranty insurance. There's no one else to go for.
Yep.
They're gone. And the only person that can fix your defective building is you.
Yeah.
I think your point is, and I'm sure the Opal owners probably don't appreciate this, but your point is, in some ways, they're lucky.
Yeah.
They have somebody big who won't disappear, who yep. they can go after. They won't get their car taken back and fixed automatically. They've got to go through a process, which is wrong, but
yep.
but at least they've got a process to go through.
But what they won't get fixed is the value of their apartments, which are, you know, the people are getting offered half of what they paid.
Mm.
By I was going to say entrepreneurs, sharks are out there going, here's an opportunity.
Right now, that's right. If they can demonstrate that they fixed it properly over time.
Put some bargains in there. You know, if you were in the business of investing in property in the long term, you might think, I'll pick up a few apartments in the Opal. Oh, nice
don't,
place.
Don't do that.
There's got to be a nice new stadium.
Please don't do that to our wonderful people, wonderful owners. we care about the owners at Opal, Jimmy. Please right. don't do that
Sorry.
To them.
Sorry, that's wrong. That's but it's funny, how we can see a building just down there where after years and years and years of disputes where the owner developer was basically lost court case after court case, and was owing probably getting up towards $100,000 in legal fees, etc., to the owners' corporation. It turned out that this very well-known person, he had built or developed the conversion from a hotel under the company name was not his company name. It was a company set up specifically for that project. And what he did was he left enough money in the funds to cover the costs of the liquidator, and then dissolved that company,
Indeed.
Liquidated that company.
Indeed.
So after years of fighting him through every court and winning, the owners ended up with nothing. No legal fees paid, no fines, nothing. And that is a very prominent figure who just... because the law allows people like that to behave like that.
Well, one of the things that the Owners Corporation Network has, I think, been successful in doing is getting the statutory duty of care on the agenda. And that sounds like a technical issue. It is a legally
yep.
technical issue. But what it means is that anyone, if it's done properly, anyone in the chain has a statutory obligation to the owners. And that includes the dodgy directors of these buildings personally.
Yes.
That puts their house on the block.
Yes.
And once their house is on the block, they might move out and we might be able to have homeowner warranty insurance again.
Yeah. Right.
The insurers will not take the risk of these companies.
No.
That's why we don't have compulsory homeowner warranty insurance above three levels. They won't take the risk. So where does that risk go, Jimmy?
Well, it always falls back.
Always falls back to the consumer.
As I've said many times, we are the owners of apartments are the only people in the whole chain who are legally obliged to pay for repairs and maintenance. Nobody else. No, nowhere else in the law does it
even
say...
Even if they get a lemon.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And that's one of the great scandals of our age.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the future of the Owners Corporation Network, Phil, where are you heading? You've had a win, a significant win. I wouldn't underplay it with the Airbnb or Holiday Lights, which you'd call it. You are making progress on cladding.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the future?
There's a huge future for an organisation that's trying to protect apartment consumers because they are so poorly protected.
Mm.
When apartment owners realise that and they need an organisation to look after consumer protection, then we can start to service that.
Mm.
It's a chicken and egg for us. We have to get to a critical mass of resources to service the critical issues.
Mm.
And then I think it'll explode. My reference point is the Choice magazine,
mm-hmm.
who started out, you know, a bit like us,
yep.
doing things, moved away from sponsorships and we're independent.
Yep.
Our integrity really matters. When we talk about a product, we don't want to be connected to anybody. They struggled financially as we are right now.
Yeah.
But they built that. They built that to a point now where I go to the Choice magazine site because they've got good services.
Trust them?
We trust them because they're not connected to sponsors. Now, the problem we've got at the moment is we've got some wonderful sponsors.
Yeah.
And they've been very good to us and not asking for very much. And they've kept us afloat.
Yeah.
And we might have to continue to rely on some of that sponsorship to keep doing the good things, particularly in the policy area, because policy doesn't really pay. You know, you can't charge people directly for a discussion with government on a policy issue.
No.
There's not a direct connection there. You can charge them for a service that says, here we are, we've got an Strata Answers service for you.
Yep.
And
You've just named a company that
by accident, but because they happen to have that name. But people need answers to strata questions. They need somewhere to go when they've got problems, and we are looking at some kind of a service along those lines. Mm. We see it all the time on the forum. We've got a forum where people share ideas, and a question comes up. Sometimes it gets answered very well. One of the experienced members will come in and answer it very well. Sometimes it's not so well, and sometimes they need someone to talk to because it's a complex problem.
And another thing, and I've discovered this from the Flat Chat forum, is somebody will say, you know, I've got a problem with the roof of our laundry is falling down, and the strata manager says this, and the people don't care, and what's the situation? And you write, well, the situation is common property, blah, 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 blah. They come back and go, yeah, that's what I've been telling the committee, but they won't listen to me.
Indeed.
And then you realise what they want is an advocate, not a lawyer, because then the expense becomes, you know, it can become out of proportion to the problem. But they want somebody authoritative to go and sit in the committee meeting and say, here's the law, this is what the law says, and this is what will happen to you if you continue to disobey the law. For instance, the great threat is the appointment of a statutory strata manager, the bogeyman option. Yeah,
correct. And even that's a hard thing to
I should say
achieve.
The bogey person. There's a lot of female strata managers out there.
Yeah. That's right. And you could avoid a lot of that with a decent mediation service.
Yeah.
One of the good things about the NCAT process is the mediation has a high success rate compared.
I'm going to dispute that.
Okay,
Phil.
Fine.
I'm going to take you on about that because I was discussing this with somebody the other day.
I was just going to say, okay, you go. Well,
having been through the mediation process myself on a different issue, it was a noisy neighbour problem, and I decided to take it on myself just to find out what the process was like, you know, because it's all very well for me to sit here and say, you should do this, you should do that. Without
and I haven't been through it either, so you're probably better informed
So I end up going in, and this fairly inexperienced mediator is saying, no, what's the problem? And I said, well, it's this guy is making all this noise at these ridiculous hours. And she said, well, is it the level of noise or is it the time at which it's being made? Because she was angling towards, well, we will let him make noise as long as it's not at this time, or we will let him make noise at that time as long as it's not as much as it was. And I'm saying, no, it's both. And I remember her saying to me, you cannot have both. And I said, yes, I can, and I will. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this process, all you want is to get this off the books, to say we've resolved, we've reached an agreement. That hasn't resolved my problem. That has not resolved my problem. But what has happened is I have ticked the box that allows me to go to the next step. And that was the clincher. And it made me realize that a lot of mediation is about compromise. A lot of problems in strata are not grey areas. They're black and white. Somebody making a lot of noise at 3 o'clock in the morning has two components, both of which have to be dealt with. So that's why
that's
I have a slightly jaded view.
That's interesting. I was simply quoting what I understood to be the success rate.
Compared with
going to the NCAT, in terms of avoiding costs and pain, and
absolutely,
and getting something resolved, even if it's a compromise. Having that process there is better than not having that there.
Oh, I agree, and I think there's a lot of
people jump to the NCAT too quickly, I think.
And I think, well, you know, the fact that you have to go through the mediation before you get to NCAT, I think, is a good thing.
I agree.
I think people go into mediation with a wrong. They think the mediator is going to adjudicate.
Yes, no.
You know, they think the mediator is going to say, you're wrong, and therefore you have to stop doing that, and that's never going to happen. But I think they also don't realize that the mediator is looking at those statistics of a 70% resolution. Well, what is a resolution? A resolution is two people agreeing to stop fighting. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So I take your point.
Yeah, but I'm probably a little bit jaded from my own experience.
So we want to improve the services for the owners. One of the most common questions is on the forum is, who knows a good strata manager? Well, we'd like to have strata manager of the year. We'd like to have proper rankings of strata managers. A bit like choice ranks a refrigerator, at least have those ones that are scoring 5 stars, those individuals that are scoring 5 stars. Challenge I always put down to a service provider when I meet them is, you give me 3 of our members who are prepared to give you a 5-star rating and we'll talk.
Yeah.
So far, very few have come up, met that challenge.
Strata manager of the year is a...
That's a good one, isn't it?
But I like the other end of that as well. I like the Ernie Awards that they do for the most sexist people in Parliament. If we had the dodgy awards...
It would probably end up being politicians mostly, because they can't see you quite the same way.
That's exactly right.
And same with building managers. We're doing some work on building accreditation, the whole area of accreditation for service providers in Strata's week. So we would really like to advance accreditation process. We've been working with a group in Queensland called ABMA. We're running some pilot programs with building managers. It's been very well received, because there is no accreditation for a facilities manager. Formal accreditation. Anybody can put their shingle up. When you go to market to procure these people, you look at what their background is, you look at how many buildings they've had, but there is no accreditation that says these guys are trained in this and passed courses and all that sort of stuff. That doesn't happen. So working on accreditation of all the service providers. Again, think there's things we can do in the policy space, but there's also the service to members. In the end, it's the members that'll keep paying the fees if they're getting value for those fees.
Right.
And that's where we'd like to target, a member-driven organisation.
And on that note, Phil, thanks so much for coming in to the Flat Chat Wrap. It's been very interesting. We could have sat here and talked for another 2 hours, but it's...
I'm sure we could have.
But we have a seminar on the March the 16th where we can keep this discussion going.
And we've got the Owners Corporation Network website on...
OCN.org.au.
That's it, exactly.
And that's where you'll find details about the seminar.
Correct.
Which will be MC'd, hosted, whatever you want to call it, by me.
By the amazing Jimmy Thompson.
The more amazing one. I'll be as amazing as I possibly can
be.
Thanks, Phil.
My thanks to Phil Goll for that chat, and of course to Yasmin Catley. That's us for this week. If you enjoy listening to the Flat Chat Wrap, please subscribe through whatever service delivers it to you. And tell your friends, they might enjoy it too. And of course, if you want to find out more about what's happening in the world of Strata, come to the Flat Chat website. That's flat-chat.com.au. Thanks for listening. I've been Jimmy Thompson. Talk to you next week.